Jonty, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am very, very well. How are you this morning?
Oh, getting there slowly. It's start of semester, so parking on campus is a nightmare. But other than that, I'm plodding on.
I think anybody who's ever been to a university can relate to that. But to kick off with, what actually was the nature of the discovery that was made last week for anybody who may not have heard of it so far?
So this is a follow-on discovery from something that was announced 12 months ago. So the TRAPPIST collection of telescopes, that's where the name comes from. It's actually an acronym for a fairly lengthy description of the kind of telescopes they're using. That's a survey that's looking at a lot of these very cool, what we call ultra-cool dwarf stars, to try and look for hints of planets around them. And they're a collection of stars that have not really been studied that much before, so they've found a niche and they're focusing on it. The reason that the star's called TRAPPIST-1 is that this is the first of the stars they're surveying around which they've found planets. And they announced this time last year, well, May last year, that they thought they'd found three planets, but they needed to do more follow-up work. This is the kind of sequel to that discovery, essentially. On the back of that, they got a huge amount of observing time with telescopes around the world, and even 20 days of continuous observing with the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is unheard of. That's time worth millions of dollars. And using all of that, they've found that this star doesn't just have three planets, it's got seven of them. All of them about the same size as the Earth, give or take about 20 or 30%, whizzing around really close into this tiny, dim, cool ember.
That is absolutely mind-boggling. So obviously there are seven planets that are orbiting this star, that we've seen at the very least. But scientists are particularly interested in the three out of the seven. Could you tell us a little bit more about why those ones are so important?
So I think this is a bit of a hook to get people excited. What you've got is a star that's incredibly cool. To put it in perspective, if you dropped it in our solar system in the place of the sun, it wouldn't be any brighter than the full moon. It would be a factor of more than a million times dimmer than the sun, and the Earth would freeze solid and everything would die. So that'd be a bad thing for us.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
To make the Earth habitable again, we'd have to ramp it, bring it really close into that star to huddle up against the warmth. It's like trying to stay warm on a cold winter's night around a campfire. If the campfire's just a few little embers, you've got to be a lot closer to it than if it's a roaring blaze. Fortunately, though, these planets that we found around TRAPPIST-1 are all very close in. They're all between 1 and 10 million kilometres from the star. So that's the Earth is 150 million kilometres from the sun. These are much, much closer in, which means that they're at about the right temperature that if everything else has lined up perfectly, they could, and this is a very big could, it's a very big if, but they could have the right temperature on the surface to have liquid water. And that's why people have got so excited. You've got planets that are a similar size to the Earth at about the right temperature where they could have liquid water if they were exactly like the Earth.
And so in the discovery of these planets, I mean, just to channel out in a sci-fi movie for a second, obviously, as you mentioned, there is a possibility that they will be able to sustain life. But if that does turn out to be the case, is there then a possibility further down the road that humans will ever actually be able to travel to these planets?
Well, I'm an optimist. I mean, I think it would take a huge effort. Now, sending our robotic minions out there is more achievable. So your listeners may remember the discussions just over a year ago about Project Starshot, this very speculative research program that Yuri Milner has thrown $100 million at. The idea of trying to build spacecraft the size of computer chips that we can fire to the nearest stars at a quarter of the speed of light to get photographs back from them. Now, if we were to do that, say, 30 or 40 years in the future, those spacecraft traveling at 25% of the speed of light would take 160 years to get there, and the data would take 40 years to get back. So you'd be looking at saying, we're going to send these spacecraft now so that in 200 years, our ancestors can see the pictures. Further down the line, though, for humanity to physically travel there will require either it to turn out that the laws of physics are different to what we believe they are at the current time, or it would require us to come up with generation ships to send people off to live many generations before they get there, because we don't yet currently have any way to accelerate manned spacecraft to anywhere near the speeds you'd need to get there in a reasonable time. Doesn't mean we won't have in the future, but it's certainly a very long-term vision.
Yes, now I'm picturing Wally right now, and it's a kind of scary thought. But just, I suppose, looking in the short term, not 200 years and several generations into the future, what is the next step now that we have made this discovery?
The next step is to learn more about these planets. Now, my gut instinct is that these aren't actually going to be habitable worlds in the sense of being like the Earth. that are a little bit less dense than we are. And from how they look, we actually think they're probably a bit more like the moons of Jupiter in the way they're formed. And so I have a sneaking suspicion that these things may be actually too wet for life. If I had to gamble on anything, I'd say they may be very water rich. And if they had oceans, they'd be hundreds of kilometers deep, not the shallow oceans we've got where you can have continents. So I think what's really exciting to me as an astronomer are two things about this discovery. The first is you have here a planetary system that we think probably formed more like the moons of Jupiter than like the regular planets in our solar system. And that in itself is quite cool and unusual and is going to give people a lot of food for thought. But the most exciting thing here is that it's a further confirmation, a further affirmation that planets of the same size as the Earth are everywhere in the cosmos. To have seven of them around one tiny little cool ember that, in all honesty, is not the first place you'd think to look for planets, well, that suggests they must be everywhere. And if there are planets the same size as the Earth everywhere, then there are going to be planets like the Earth. They might not be as common because you need all these other things to stack up to give you a planet that's truly like the Earth. But if planets like this are everywhere, then we'll eventually find one that really does look like home 2.0.
It is such an exciting time to be studying this sort of thing. Jonty, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.